no role plays, just real. Chris and Lorenzo share 4 decades of combined experience to help you become a more effective leader.
We've never really, as a workforce, spent a lot of time on making sure we're developing good leaders.
We'll be able to share stories, experience, mistakes, failures, successes.
This is Hacking Your Leadership.
Welcome to Hacking Your Leadership. I'm Chris.
And I'm Lorenzo.
And Lorenzo, on this episode, I want to do a little bit of a follow-up to last Monday's episode, where we talked about Gen Z and the workforce and what's important to them and how to lead a multi-generational team of people. We got a lot of feedback from that episode and a lot of good feedback. A lot of people kind of like giving their thoughts on their struggles they've had with this and people saying that you know they liked the episode a lot, but they wanted more. They wanted more follow-up. And one of our listeners actually sent me a link to an article that I thought was really cool. And it's funny that I hadn't seen the article before we recorded the episode, but I wish I had. And the article is from Forbes in their leadership category. It's called "It's Not Them, It's You: How to Improve the Workplace Generation Gap." And the tagline, the subline is, "We easily forget that there is a cross-generational need that transcends age groups, and that's emotional safety." And we touched on this, you know, in a little bit in last Monday's episode, where we said that, you know, the different goals and wants and desires can be different from generation to generation when it comes to actual tangible things. But if you want to go back to the hub of what drives all of those things, there are commonalities because of who we are as people. We're human beings, and no matter what generation you're a part of, as a human being, there are certain things that you value or that you want. All that's changed really is the ability to hold your employer accountable to delivering them. That has gotten better. Before, you weren't able to. You had to kind of just grin and bear it, and hopefully you had a empathetic leader, though that was less likely 30, 40 years ago. And if you didn't have one, it's like, well, you needed the job, so you just figured out a way to compartmentalize it and move on and then leave work and go home. And so that doesn't mean that those people didn't want those things. It just meant that they didn't really have an avenue of obtaining them, and those avenues are there now. And so I want to get your thoughts on this because, you know, you read the article as well. This is it's pretty profound in terms of like what leaders should be doing to kind of be able to speak to a multi-generational workforce in ways that don't make broad generalizations, but that also meet people where they are.
It's such an interesting thing right now, because I think a little bit to your point, like what was expected before and what was, you know, in some instances, like even allowed in regards to the uniqueness approach, or like leaders who really had this like innate skill or competence in the past. I think most people looked at those leaders and they just really attached themselves to them because they were really good at balancing the idea of, kind of broad and consistent expectations for everyone, but were able to flex into the uniqueness of the individual and provide levels of support or dialogue or conversation for that person. And then I think that as time has gone on, what we've seen now is this this kind of high level of EQ and the ability to be empathetic in the moment, but also like create consistency for everyone else. Like I think so much of that now is now. I would hate to say required for leaders, but if you don't have these skills, I think the jobs and the roles become much harder and more frustrating for both you and the people that you lead.
Yeah, the article mentions a quote by Simon Sinek, and you know we're big fans of Simon Sinek on the show. Simon Sinek says that people lie, hide, and fake because these traditional models that are focused on maintaining control and firing people without a second thought. We maintain these environments through a changing workforce. And so, you know, people move on, we bring the next generation in or the next set of people in and expect them to feel safe and do their jobs well. Well, that only works if they have the safety of you have the same thing every day. You work 9 to 5 and you leave at 5 o'clock on the dot. You compartmentalize your work away from your personal life. That works only when the work that you're doing is not one that occupies a large space in your brain. Like, meaning when there's no way to do your work when you're not at work, because you're, you know, for lack of a better example, you're turning the same nut on the assembly line. You know, you can't do that at home. So you don't think about it when you're at home. But a lot of the jobs that we're doing now are not, you know, assembly line type jobs. They're rooted in thought, and they're rooted in, you know, what contributions can we make in terms of our experience and our subject matter expertise? How can we put thought into solving a problem? It's really hard, if not impossible, to turn that off when you are not at work. And so what that means is that in order to get the best productivity and the best results out of people, you need to meet them where they are when it comes to that emotional safety component, when it comes to being able to allow them to turn it off when they need to, so that they can focus on themselves. Self-care is a big thing. Whatever they need to do in order to make sure that that when they are working, that they're putting their best work into it, is a necessity. The article makes the example of, you know, it's the equivalent of if a person is on an assembly line all day long, it's giving them a chair to sit in every once in a while, because standing up for 9 hours straight is a tough thing to do. No matter how many chairs you give a person, if their job isn't on their feet anyway, if their job is in terms of what type of thought expertise and thought leadership they're bringing to something and the problems they're solving, if they're expected to have that as part of their job, you can't really take a load off by sitting down. That's something that you have to take a load off by being very intentional on how you fill the hours of your day and the things that you do that allow you to turn that off. And I think a lot of organizations, they don't think about it in that same way, because they don't look at the you know, mental health the same way they look at physical health in a lot of instances.
I want to underline your point about that, because I think of, you know, as a leader with people and having conversations and having to problem solve and, you know, and providing levels of different empathy and motivation and accountability and like all of these, you know, elements of both mental and sometimes emotional, I wouldn't say like it's like energy that has to happen. Like sometimes you come home and you just don't want to talk to anybody.
Right.
You don't want to make any decisions. You know, like you don't want to consume any even content or watch any shows that would create, you know, having to think about what's going on or having to solve for what that situation is. Like
it's like sensory overload almost.
Absolutely. Like, and it's all day. And it's like, again, it's most days. So I think that continuing to understand that for people and for different generations and knowing that we've learned things over time, and whether you pull it back to the old books around, like, you know, filling your bucket or providing you with things that bring you joy or happiness, because that can be energizing in a positive way. I think those things are not only important to do every once in a while, but I think the expectation is going to be that these things are a part of everyday work to a degree. And like those are the things that will evolve into workforces where if you have organizations and leaders that are providing these parts these types of experiences and jobs, that will be a huge differentiator from the rest of the workforce. They may not be thinking about it that way. And I know we've talked about, like, you know, having ping pong tables and vending machines and all that type of stuff.
Sure.
There's a benefit to that. People enjoy it. It crosses a lot of different generations. But I think now we're going into a space where those things are nice to haves. And what people really want is that level of personalization and engagement and the ability to tap into the things that bring them joy or motivate them a lot more frequently, a lot more consistently, and not just a every once in a while type of thing.
Right. Well, those are the icing, you know, not the cake. And if you look at you know, the growth in Silicon Valley, not recently, but, you know, years and years ago when these type of like job perks first started, you'd have organizations where the expectation of work was actually pretty high. You know, you had people that were just out of college and they were expected to work 50, 60 hours a week. But again, there was a ping pong table and there was, you know, free food and, you know, unlimited granola bars or whatever you want to call it. And people are like, well, I have to work 50 hours a week, but at least I get my ping pong table and my granola bar. And that was fine because that's what everybody had to do. That was considered the differentiator. And now people are saying, wait a minute, that those things right there are the extra. And so while, yeah, that might be a differentiator from one job to another, the price of admission is the cake itself. And I'd rather work at a job that allows me the flexibility of working how I want, where I want, when I want, with the people that are as passionate about it as I am, doing work that speaks to me on an emotional and purpose-driven level. I'd rather do all that and you can keep your ping pong table, you know, or if I have many opportunities to do all that work with a lot of organizations, then the extras, like what you're talking about, those will come back again as differentiating factors once we're in a space where the norm is jobs that offer these kind of purpose-driven environments to work in. But right now, that's not the norm. That's kind of like, you know, employers are struggling to find that. And there are some that are doing it well. And in those areas where they're doing it well, they don't need the ping pong table and their granola bars. You know, if you provide that kind of core benefit to people, that in itself is enough. And at the end of the day, it probably means they're not at the office long enough in order to play ping pong.
Yeah, no, it's a great call. And I think as leaders going forward, like the ability to make sure that you find joy, like the self-reflection to know that you find joy in the people business and in the ability to you know, to get to know people, to be curious about who they are and what they do, to work with them, to make sure that you're helping them to define the goals that they have, you know, at work and in most times, you know, personal goals and things they're trying to achieve, and helping them to connect those types of dots, like really making sure that you find joy in that work, I think is going to be so critical as we go forward. Because I think a lot of times, like, you know, in the past, historically, people, you become a leader because you were really good at the thing that you did. And then you got good at maybe training people or you know, bringing some level of influence them in a positive way that helped them to do better at what they're supposed to be doing. So now the team is doing better. And you know, you're showing this skill set of being able to get people to work together more efficiently or more effectively. And then I think, you know, in the last couple of years here, a lot of the dialogue has been about, okay, but also how do you make people feel while doing it? And how do you adapt who, you know, how you lead and what you do to make sure that you're being inclusive? And how are you meeting the unique needs of the individual? Like we've very quickly layered on a lot of these things that leaders, you know, are going to have to be really good at right now and going forward. And I think that there's a lot of leaders that are just trying to catch up. And there's a lot of leaders that are that have found success in maybe spaces, and they're having a hard time finding success now in kind of this new realm of how do we engage and how do we inspire and motivate people. And I mean, like I think it's all of us, all leaders are trying to figure this type of thing out. And you know, based on our conversation last week that people really were talking about is like that part a lot of people were saying is like, I need to do more research. I need to learn more about the generations. I need to get better at understanding those generations that may just see the world and the work very different than I do. And while I think I wish and hope and think that people should see it the same way that I do, the reality is that they don't, and that's okay, as long as you are taking the time to understand it. And then as long as they're willing to engage you at that level to do the work that needs to get done. So again, I think there's just so much to unpack here. And as leaders, taking the time to educate ourselves so that you have as many tools and resources as possible to engage with the individuals on your teams so that you can then have a larger, more kind of broad strategy for everyone, but that you're able to step into the individual interactions when needed.
Yeah, we'll post a link to the article that I'm referring to here, and it's by Ciara Unger. You should definitely check it out if you get the, get a moment. But a couple of things that she says that are important to do if you're a leader and you're looking to do this, I really want to focus on, because I think a lot of people think they're doing this when in actuality they're not. So one of the things that she says to do is to focus on common ground. Now, it goes exactly to what you just said, Lorenzo, that, you know, you, instead of saying, you know, that my goal is that I want to live in a safe neighborhood where I can own a home so that my children can go to a safe school and have a good education, that's where you are in your life. A person on your team may not care about any of those things, but the common ground is you both care about reaching your own personal goals, whatever that is. The goal might be different, but the desire to reach a personal goal, you are at work for a reason, and part of that reason is that you believe it will help you attain a personal goal or multiple personal goals. And so if you approach it from the standpoint of my goals are different than this person, therefore we can't have common ground, you've already lost. If you approach it from the standpoint of I have goals that I want to attain, and this person I'm leading has goals they want to attain, so the common ground is that we're both here for a reason, and let's figure out how we can work together so that we both accomplish our goals instead of feeling like we're working against each other. That's the common ground that she's talking about. And I think if you kind of shift the mindset as a leader from trying to figure out how to you know, make cookie cutters of yourself out of your people, instead just focus on where we have commonalities as human beings. The second thing that she touches on, and I kind of want to kind of add something to it too. She says that it's important to define emotional safety as a team. And so I like that. I like the idea of a team kind of coming up with what it means to have an emotionally safe environment. But I want to add the caveat of their definition can't fly in the face of what your business is there to do. You know, like you are still there to get a job done, whatever that looks like. And if emotional safety as a team means, you know, we all only work 2 days a week. And that's an extreme example, of course. We work 2 days a week and never at the same time. That's going to be really hard to collaborate if you involve collaboration. If you know, you're in the business that we've been in for a lot of years, if you're in retail leadership, you can't really work from home in a retail environment yet. Maybe that will change, but as of right now, there still has to be some bodies present. And so the definition of emotional safety as a team has to be within the confines of what the job is, but as long as you can agree what the job is, and that has to be defined and agreed upon, then the definition of what that emotional safety is really should be agreed on by the team. Because you deciding as a leader that you have all the answers is, even if they're the right answers, if they were defined by you and not by the team, they won't be met with acceptance. They'll be met with pushback.
Absolutely. And with that, it brings us to this episode's 1 minute hack. But first, a few words from our sponsors.
The 1 minute hack.
All right, for this episode's 1 minute hack, here's what I want you to do. I want you to get out a pen and paper, and I want you to write down your goals, short-term and long-term, the ones that you hope to accomplish in the next few months to a year, and the ones that you hope to accomplish over the course of several years. Be very clear about what they look like in detail, not just kind of broad level, but specifically what it looks like and how you can define whether or not you accomplished it, because they have to be definable. And then I want you to sit down with the members of your team, the people who report to you, and I want you to share those goals with them. I want you to make sure that your team knows why you're there. These are the goals you want to accomplish. This is what you hope to leverage this role or this job, this position, this work into. Start there and then ask them to share theirs. They'll have to, hopefully they'll take time to write it down first and at a later meeting they can bring that, as opposed to making them kind of come up with it on the fly. Give them that time, give them that space, and ask them for detailed, specific goals. Just sharing your goals with them will absolutely humanize you to them, and asking them for what their goals are will allow them to kind of say, you know what, let me really think about why I'm here. And then you as the leader, it's your responsibility to figure out what within the scope of your job can be done to help them achieve those goals. And it might not be much. It might just be flexibility in scheduling. It might be, you know the existence of certain benefits or solutions your organization offers that they might not be aware of, and you can define it for them and make sure they know where to go. It can run the gamut for that of even who you know, who you can introduce them to if they want to move up within the organization. But if you start looking at your goal as a leader is helping them accomplish their goals. It needs to start with making sure that you are both on the same page, that you both have goals to begin with, and you're there to accomplish them.
Absolutely. I think it's a great one minute hack, and just continuing to share amongst, you know, your team what you're focused on and what you're trying to achieve, and then having them share with what they're trying to achieve. I think starting there is so helpful in connecting the work that you do every day to achieving those types of goals.
Yeah, without that, you're basically just left assuming that the goals of your team are the same as your goals. And if you think about it long enough, you know that's inherently not the case. And so that means that any action you take is going to be in spirit of you accomplishing your goals, which may fly in the face of them accomplishing theirs. As long as you know what is needed for them to accomplish theirs and you to accomplish yours, the steps you're taking, the steps that you're taking as a leader aren't going to be, you know, kind of in spirit of one and against the other, because they need to be in spirit of both together in order for both you and your people to feel like you're accomplishing something when you go to work every day.
Absolutely. And with that, it brings us to the end of this episode. This is Hacking Your Leadership. I'm Lorenzo.
And I'm Chris.
And we'll talk to you all next time.